Oh, great. Okay. We're just kind of, I'm just doing a little bit of kind of intake, some impressions or questions based on what I shared last week on Dovid Chaim's call as the guest speaker. So Simcha, would you have a question to follow that up, or is it more just kind of a comment?
No, I guess what I was, you know, what I'm hoping is, you know, to be able to learn more of it, maybe hear examples of where, you know, how you've used it in a way.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. Great. Now, can I ask, is there, Dovid Chaim mentioned that there might be a moderator joining on the call.
Yeah, I'm going to be recording the call.
Oh, great. I noticed that somebody activated the record method. Okay, who's this?
This is Yaakov.
Hi, Yaakov. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate your presence on the call. Now, will you be here for the duration of the call? Because I know that there can be sometimes where we want to mute folks and then we want to unmute folks. If you can't, I'd be happy to try and, you know, hand over the instructions to me. But if you're able, that would be great.
I will try, Blinader, yeah.
Okay, fine. So it could be that, all right, so I think we might as well, we should probably go ahead and you know, jump in. I don't know if there's anyone, I'd just like to put out there before I start, I have kind of what I'm intending to share. But it always helps me to kind of tune into who I'm speaking to. So if there's anyone else that would be interested to share a comment or a question based on what they heard in the last week's talk I gave as a guest, you know, what struck you, what raised questions in your mind, what have you seen, anything in regards to the insight or the ideas that I shared last week, does someone else have something to add before I start? Okay, so we'll go ahead. So Yaakov, I guess it makes sense for the time being at least to put a mute or something. Whatever, you know, you've done this before, so I'll leave it to you to manage how we best manage the technical side of it. All right, Paul. So I'm going to go ahead and start, and then, you know, I'm going to pause at points to check in, okay? So last week I shared a little bit about the principles of innate health, and as Simcha pointed out in his comments, it doesn't really seem to suggest any kind of tools or strategy, and that's kind of by design. You know, that is absolutely part of the understanding that we're kind of describing how things work, rather than giving a prescription to how to do things. Because the understanding is that there is an operative wisdom that we're already living in, that we're already kind of functioning with, that is going to be the greatest contribution. It is the greatest contribution to the life that we're living, to the life that we want to live. And to some extent, you get in the way of really utilizing that. You know, here's an example, here's a metaphor that just struck me recently that kind of illustrates it. I have a 4.5-year-old who's pretty motivated to ride a bike, to learn to ride a bike. And, you know, it's funny because when I got with him on the bike,
Do you hear me, Rabbi Harris?
I do, yeah.
You're not coming out so clear. Maybe you're not speaking into the phone or something. It sounds a little blurry. Maybe try. Yeah, that's better. Try to speak into like
better?
That. Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
Okay,
try
I'm
to speak
try.
Into the. Okay, great. Thanks.
If I'm speaking like this, is it clear?
I think so. Yeah, much better.
Okay, good. Thank you for interrupting. You'll let me know if it happens again. So, looking at my 4.5-year-old in the as he was preparing to get on the bike without the wheels, you know, I just kind of saw, like, it looked complicated to me. Like, how is he going to do this? You know, and he's going to fall, and et cetera. But he was pretty motivated, and I gave him a little bit of input about focusing on balancing more than on working the pedals and just kind of gliding. And he definitely fell, but it was amazing because within a relatively short period of time, he was up and going. And what I'm seeing when I step back for a moment, you know, how does that work? You know, how does the 4.5-year-old go from not knowing how to manage, to navigate his balance, and that, you know, there's a lot of information to assimilate in riding a bike. You know, there's all kinds of, if we could spell it out, it would be a relatively complicated procedure. The depth of, you know, perception and the coordination, the speed, turns and the braking and, you know, but practically speaking, it kind of happens in the moment. It happens in the moment, and to the degree that he is not overly concerned about how he's doing, he doesn't have a lot on his mind about learning to ride a bike. He's just kind of present to what's happening, and there's, it's amazing that a human being has a learning curve. You know, human beings have a beautiful, wondrous learning curve that we get how to do things. And you couldn't, you know, he couldn't, obviously he's 4.5, he couldn't tell you how he did it. He doesn't know how he did it. So what is it that allowed him to do something that, like, he went from not being able to navigate to navigate? It points to a wisdom that is already present, that's already happening inside of us, that we're already getting insights and ideas and understanding that is available to us, especially to the degree that we are not overly involved in thought of a busy and judgmental nature. You know, like... And this is true. You could see this for anything. You could see it. You get hired for a job, and you know somebody puts you into a new role that you haven't done before, and he starts you off with the premise that basically he says, "Look, you know, this is a responsible job. It's a difficult job, and you know, I want to give you a shot, but I'm just letting you know there's not a lot of margin for error. You know." So, like, you know, that's kind of one mode. Hold on. That's one mode of experiencing a new position. Alternatively, there's coming into a position where the idea is that, like, you know, the manager says to you, look, I know that you can do this job. I know that it's new for you. And I'm just assuming that you're going to fall down a bunch of times before you get it. So just give yourself permission to make mistakes because that's how you're going to learn, right? So those are, you know, those are two very different experiences of learning. And it makes sense to me that obviously when we want to help people find their way and we want to help them tap into their own capacity to learn and understand, we want to give them space. You know, we don't want to contribute to a cluttered and busy mind, because we have the ability to see things in the moment. Human beings have wisdom that we see things in the moment, we understand things, and we make connections. And those things aren't happening through the power of our personal intellect. Those aren't.
It's again becoming a little bit blurred, the sound.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why. Okay. Go on.
Maybe, well, it's funny because this is the exact same phone I used on the guest call. I could try to call in from I can't.
No, you sound good now. It sounds like you're sort of leaving, like going away from the phone a little. Is that possible?
And maybe an inch, not more. I'll try to stay right here.
Okay, sounds good now. Go on.
Okay.
Sorry.
No problem. Thank you. I apologize for the fact that it's not smooth. So, again, the point I'm making is that, see, we have, as I pointed out earlier, we have the ability to, we have thought of a personal nature that we can direct and kind of manage, you know, like, I could ask myself a question, you know, give me five reasons why I can be grateful, you know, and then my brain will show up, you know, my brain will process that and give me five reasons. And sometimes those reasons might touch, you know, they might touch me, but often as not, they might not, you know, they might not, they just might kind of operate on kind of an intellectual level. But there's also an experience of thought that I have that's not personally directed. It's not managed. It's not thought that is it's not under my management. I'm having thought show up, understanding show up that just it's happening. It's the same way that, like I said last week, you know, whoever's on this call right now is listening, but there's other thoughts popping into your head. You know, that's just the nature. It's like if you were an athlete or if you follow sports, you understand that the difference separating highly accomplished athletes, you know, from like the really good athletes to the top of the game, is generally not so much let me pause there for a second. Let me just pause there for a second. I'm making a distinction between this idea that we have the ability to direct our thoughts. We have thoughts that we can manage and kind of choose actively. But then there's thoughts and understanding that comes to us. And it's not something that we can direct or even, you know, we're not managing it, but yet it's showing up. My 4.5-year-old learned to ride a bike not because of the greatness of his manage, you know, he just wanted it, that's all. And then he got understanding that allowed him to go from, you know, not having the skill to having the skill. And that's, to me, this understanding is mostly about pointing to the idea that there's, you know, Emunah tells us that wisdom is already in play. Wisdom is already operating. And mostly what happens is that we, but through an innocent misunderstanding of our own personal thought, of our experience of thought, we can get lost. So let me give you an example that to me kind of has relevance. Okay, I shared a little bit about this last week, but you know, to me, the very fact of something called moods points to this understanding. I have an experience at times where my experience of marriage feels to me dissatisfying, and even like I feel like I'm dealing with a little bit of an injustice, you know, that my wife is difficult in certain ways. And it's not right because she's stubborn in ways that if she could see things differently, it would be easier, and it's affecting me and the home. And, you know, I get agitated and feeling, I just feel like I've been kind of wronged and et cetera. Now, interestingly enough, what I see is that the same circumstances and the same behaviors or lacks of behavior on my wife's part that can be the source of my, you know, the reason I attribute my upset about, there will be other times where they don't bother me so much. I kind of see that my wife is really trying. She feels overwhelmed, and despite her, and despite the difficulty she's having, she's really working at things. And I feel, you know, on to the other extreme, like a level of understanding, compassion, right? That's what I see about myself. I see that in my marriage. I see that in my relationship with my children. There are times where I want to go somewhere, and I'm trying to get them to come, and they're not responsive. And I just feel like it's a problem of a meaningful nature, like why they're not listening, they're not mechunach, I'm not doing something right that they could react or not react, and it just feels kind of urgent and difficult. And then other times I'm trying to get something done or get their opinion, their participation or cooperation, and they're not responsive.
And I'll see that they're kids and they're a little bit lost in their world. And maybe I'm still aware that it's not respectful, it's not l'chatchila, but I don't take it personally. I just kind of see that they're in their world, and it doesn't look to be a problem to me. Now, what I'm describing to you, to me, now I view this as moods. And it's not because I'm working effectively to see things differently when I feel calmer. It's not because I've utilized strategies or tools. It's just that I'm in a nicer mood. And in a nicer mood, things don't feel as personal. They don't feel as threatening. I'm just not as reactive to things. I have a little more understanding and a little more breadth of perspective. Now, the whole idea of moods to me is a little bit of a mystery. It's kind of like, you know, why is that, that I could have those varying, why I could operate in different places on that spectrum? To me, this points to the concept of thought, you know, the idea of thought as one of the three principles I shared last week. The principles, again, are descriptions of reality. They're descriptions of the way the world is working, whether we're aware of it or not. It's gravity. Gravity is happening. You don't know about it, it's still happening. Thought, the experience of thought coming to us in the moment, moment to moment to moment, there's thoughts that are coming into our consciousness, into our mind, whether we're aware of it or not, and it's of a variable nature, because it's the nature of thought is that it's changing and shifting. It's a spiritual unfolding of new information that's passing through my mind. And that's definitely affecting me. There's no question my mood is shifting. Now, what's beautiful to me is that I understand that if I'm feeling a certain way, I now have more appreciation that my feeling is coming not from the circumstance of my wife and the way she's acting, or not from the circumstance of my children or any circumstance for that matter. I know, at least on an idea level, that I'm not really experiencing my circumstances. I'm experiencing my thinking in the moment. So all I'm really feeling right this moment. I'm just feeling my experience I'm just feeling my own thinking in the moment. And of course, sometimes I forget that, and I get lost, and I get reactive with my wife or my children. But what I see is that at a certain point, I wake up, and I realize, oh, I'm in a bit of a thought pattern right now, and my feeling is kind of a guide for me. And to me, that has been so reassuring and so helpful, because in the past, it would look to me that I've got a Shalom bias problem. If my wife is acting in ways that are this difficult for me, it's a commentary about her how good she is a person, or how good she is as a wife. It's a commentary on the quality of my skills as a husband. It's a commentary on my, you know, character and midos. It's a commentary on the quality of our marriage. And I could get, you know, and the interesting thing about when a person's in a low mood, when a person's experiencing a kind of a flow of insecure thinking, it's easy to kind of run with it. And then everything viewed through the lens of the discouraged thinking looks discouraging. So I'd start walking around wondering about how to fix a Shalom bias problem or a character problem or a wife problem. Any process of trying to wonder about how to fix it, it wasn't a reliable vision. And further, the more I kind of inquired about how to fix it, I kind of drew further into the discouraged thinking, right? That's what ends up happening, is that I give more attention to that kind of insecure thought, and then lo and behold, I'm deeper in, and it works beautifully. This kind of, you know, that's the second of the principles I shared last week. The first being the whole idea of thought, that thoughts are flowing and coming to us, not based on our personal management. And the second is this principle of consciousness, that we have the ability to feel our thoughts. We have the ability to experience our thoughts come to life in a way that it looks like the world is really that way, and it just feels like a discouraged, you know, world. That's kind of a self-contained and self-affirming reality. I think maybe folks might be familiar with the phrase "the stinking thinking." You know, I don't know a lot about that, except that it sounds like the idea that, you know, from a certain state of mind, bad decision making, it becomes kind of a foregone conclusion. But coming to recognize that that's not really the nature of my circumstances, it's just the nature of my own mood that's fallen. To me, that's beautiful. That's like it becomes not personal. I don't feel the need to do something about the discouraged feeling that I have with my wife or with my children or with myself. I kind of recognize that I'm not really, you know, I'm just my thinking. It's a testimony about my thinking more than it is about circumstances. I want to pause for a moment and just see where this idea is going and whether it makes sense, and how could you see, for me, like I said, for me, this has been so refreshing, you know, to recognize the idea that I'm capable on a day-to-day basis of getting discouraged, not because of any truth of the matter, just because that's what human beings are doing. It has definitely allowed me to get less busy in my mind, to get less busy fixing, solving, pushing unpleasant. I'm struggling less. I'm just not as inclined to struggle because I'm aware that the whole concept of struggle is a little bit an indication of, like, I'm looking through a lens that's not reliable. So maybe Yaakov, if you could do an unmute, I would just like to check in and hear whether that
what would you like to hear?
Just if someone either has a comment or a question, does it resonate with you? You know, what are you hearing based on what I'm saying right now? And what implications or questions do you have?
Well, I think it relates to addiction also, what you're saying, because when we realize that when we're in a bad mood or something and we suddenly feel triggered much more than normal by the addiction, a lot of times we think that, you know, hey, I just have this huge Yetzirah and I have this huge problem that I just have to give in. And if we could step back and realize where it's coming from, you know, that we're just seeing it through the lens of feeling down or restless, discontent, irritable or lonely, tired, hungry, and all these different things that are triggers, you know, that lets us step back a little and reassure ourselves that it's just the lens that we're looking through, and tomorrow it won't feel that way, you know, if we just hold out. So
that's
I can
right.
definitely hear how that relates, you know.
Right. And, you know, to me, it's the emunah aspect of this that, you know, everyone who's engaged in this, in the learning that's happening through David Chaim's calls, and, you know, we're aware that we can't bring ourselves to a state of mind kind of single-handedly. You know, there's definitely a whole emunah aspect of this, which is crucial. Like we can't single-handedly draw ourselves into the right state of mind. And the simple trust that we're capable of falling into a compromised state of perspective, and then the follow-up to that is that we're capable of kind of rising to a nicer state of perspective that's also not a function of our hard work. To me this is an understanding of the letting of how I could let go a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Surrender and letting go.
I think so.
Yeah, I hear that.
Okay. is Yaakov, is that you that just shared that?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. I'm not sure, actually, if we've got anybody left on the call besides you and I. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Okay, fine. All right, well, we'll continue.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's being recorded, so we're going to put it in the Chizuk emails, the recording, so people can listen to it regardless,
okay,
so we can get
tons of people listening later. That's true. The truth is that I think there was time told me that there's a number of folks that don't access these calls live, and they access them on by recording. So,
yeah,
right. So, you know, and this is, to the degree that a person can the more a person has an appreciation for the non-personal nature of what's behind our experience. You know, every experience, every feeling we're having is really, like I said, it's an experience of the thinking. And our thinking thought is a spiritual phenomenon. We're getting thoughts coming to our mind all the time. And what's beautiful is that as we come to trust in that, as we come to, or just, I don't have to trust, we can see it, we can feel it, we can sense that thought is unfolding in us, then what's happening, like, for example, with the guy who's got, you know, I just know that in my own experience, as I shared last week, when I would struggle with my desire to escape into food, I would feel the discomfort, and then I would feel the inclination to want to go and, you know, run into, you know, a bunch of food snack things. And just the very arrival of that inclination was almost like a fact it was like a judgment. It was just like, it was as if I was my thinking. And the fact that I had thoughts of escape were a prosecution against me. And I was waiting for the day when the very presence of those thoughts would no longer visit me. And every time they would visit me, it was like I said, it was a terrible commentary about where I was holding. Does that make sense?
Not sure I really got that.
Well, you know, when I was always kind of hopeful that one day I'd wake up and I wouldn't have the same level of inclination to want to go and escape into food.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be times where, you know, I would be in a great mood and I would just feel good and I'd feel healthy and I'd feel motivated. And I would say, oh, look at that. Maybe I've turned a corner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I'd get hopeful. But lo and behold, within, you know, a day, 6 hours or an hour, you know, it would be normal that the thought would come to mind that would say, why don't you go and escape, right? And then the very occurrence of that thought was like disappointing and disheartening, like, oh, no, I didn't turn the corner. Right, so the very presence of escapist and negative thoughts in my mind were somewhat condemning of me, and it was like, and then once I would feel the condemnation of having had the thought, I would kind of reason to myself, look, man, they're there. You don't know how to rid yourself of these thoughts, and you know that you're not comfortable in the whole scheme of things, just get yourself the temporary relief that you know you want. So it was like, you know, it was the thought would show up, and then the thought would be kind of like a self-fulfilling thing. Yeah?
Self-fulfilling prophecy?
Well, it was like the very existence of the temptation was evidence that you can't overcome this. The very existence of the thought of temptation was the black mark on your soul. So might as well give in, because you see you have the black mark, you know. And
right. So what
that now mean? I'm understanding is that, like, I have a deeper appreciation of the, what I said, like, the impersonal nature of thought. Mm-hmm. I'm just not as inclined to be, like, I just see more clearly that I can have all kinds of thoughts, but I'm not, but they don't define, they're just not a commentary about my character.
Right, I get it.
Okay. Right, so like I had a beautiful story, and see, the point is that the more we are open to seeing this as human and not personal, the more we can have these thoughts flow through us and then move on. That's the crazy thing is that it's the misunderstanding about the the misunderstanding of how our thoughts are, how our thoughts work. And you know, if I feel something clearly, it's an indication of a problem with me. That just invokes a lot of struggle and judgment. And the very act of struggling is what kind of brings the thought to life even more and more. And it doesn't allow it to move on. And really, thoughts move. All thoughts are moving. They're fluid. It's our own inclination to mix into them. As I shared last week, the Pasuk from Mishle, you know, I'm calling the story of Ariv Lo Lo, Machzik Ba'ozne Kelev Oiver. A person who mixes into a dispute that's not his, really what he's doing is he's grabbing the ears of a passing dog. So, you know, my son, who's 4 and a half, who learned to ride a bike, think about what his experience of riding a bike would look like, or learning to ride a bike. If as he was learning, he was very aware of, let's say there was a whole crowd of 4 and a half-year-olds that were learning to ride, and he started looking at them and thinking about how they're doing and comparing, you know, like if he all of a sudden started to get all kinds of concerns and thoughts about how he's doing and is it going well, how many times has he fallen, can you appreciate that his learning curve is going to change?
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the beauty of this understanding, the innate health aspect, which is really just, you know, it's just a simple Jewish idea that, like, the operating platform of our own wisdom, of our neshama connection, like, we're experiencing this wisdom connection every moment. We're soaking in the wisdom of Hashem. It's coming to us all the time. But for our preoccupation with our judgments and our grabbing onto the insecure thoughts, like it's not for many of us on many occasions, it's just not acceptable to have insecure thoughts, and we're busy pushing, pulling, resisting, trying to strategize to deal with the negative thoughts, and really all that's needed is just a kind of, you know, that's why there's an expression that a number of the folks who teach these principles use. They say, we're not so much interested in the content of your thinking. We're interested in the fact of thinking. Like, it doesn't matter the content of your thinking. Just simply waking up to the fact of thought is what allows us to see in what to me is a place of menuchas and nefesh. Menuchas and nefesh is the understanding that, you can have all kinds of thoughts. You can get insecure, you can get agitated, you can get frustrated, you can get scared, and it doesn't really mean much because it's just a temporary state of affairs that is happening on a certain external nature, external aspect of your experience. It's just a certain type of flow of thinking that's passing through. That's why Shlomo Melech says, "Kishtale alecha hamayshal hazeh." When the spirit of that kishruach, the exact pasuk kishruach hamayshal tale alecha, when the spirit of that ruler comes upon you, mekaimcha al tanach, don't move. You know, don't you don't have to run anywhere. It's just gonna move on, right? So So that's the wisdom that we're relying on.
So the idea of innate health basically is summed up in a few words is that we're not our thoughts. Is that what you're saying? Thoughts are like external. We can learn to recognize them and...
We experience our thoughts, but we're not our thoughts. That's right.
Oh, that's,
and if
that's
we are... If we're, I mean, look, there's a few corollaries that go with it, but if a person understands that, then he doesn't get frightened by his thoughts, and then he lets them go, and then he lives in a different, he lives in a peaceful and calm state of mind way more frequently, and he's much more graceful about the human experience of insecure thoughts.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Now, you know, what I also see is that, you know, the whole aspect of the non-control is interesting to me. Like, sometimes I'll have a really nice mood, and I'll say to myself, okay, what can I do to hold on to this? You know, like, what can I, how do I stay in this mood? And guess what? I'm not aware of there being a way to like capture and hold a nice mood. You know, I look out sometimes at my, you know, children or my wife or somebody, and I'm just like, wow, I just feel so warm toward them, and I'm grateful for that warmth. But what, you know, like, what's going to be in a day from now where I'm not like this, you know? And then I might end up getting troubled by that, which of course is itself a form of thought. You know, that's the beauty, is that thought is so fluid. But, you know, what I see is that I don't know how to hoard a good feeling. And to me, that's a beautiful thing because it points me back again to the fact that I'm living in the unknown. Moment to moment, there's this, you know, the Almighty is sending me new insights, new thoughts. Some of them are insecure, some of them are, you know, and I'm relying on him, you know, and to me, you know, when I learn, you know, some Svarim and Machshava, and I get kind of touched by it, I've learned, you know, not too long ago about the whole concept of mana, of the man, you know, there's a midrash that says, Lo nitna Torah l'dorsha. The Torah wasn't given to be expounded and understood, Ela l'eichlei man, except to those who eat man. And man, if you recall, is the nature of man is that you couldn't manage when it came and how it came. You couldn't hoard it. It was the experience of understanding that you could work really hard to try and get, you know, a larger quantity of man. Guess what? It would be the quantity that you were allotted. And there was something, it's beautiful, there's something about living in that unknown, something about living in that recognition of not being in total control. Lo nitna Torah l'dorsha ela l'eichlei man. There's something, Torah is, this beautiful understanding called Torah is most ably understood living in this state of mind called man, you know, like the premise about nature, about life, which is that man is kind of being given to us, it's not on our terms. That is where a person is going to function optimally. That's where a person is going to understand things optimally. That, you know, we're to me, this is pointing to the lack of control and the lack of a need for control. I can have a down mood. I can feel reactive and angry, and I don't need it to move on. I just don't need it to, because all that it is just, it's just a testimony to the quality of my thought in the moment.
Mm-hmm. You're saying about the Eichlei Aman that the Torah was given to us only... to those who are able to accept that whatever they are meant to get, they'll get? Is that what you're saying? Is that how the best...
I'm basing this a little bit on a sikha of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and Sichos Moser, but, you know, he's describing the fact that the Midrash says, Lo nitna Torah l'dorsha ela l'eichlei man. That's a fact. And Reb Chaim points out that it's not just in the generation of the Ochlei Man. It wasn't a one-generation principle. It's
right.
You and I, to the degree anybody's learned Torah, or to the degree we understand wisdom of any nature, we understand wisdom most deeply when we're living with some level of humility and some level of acceptance that we're not in control. You know, the more we're trying to control, the more we're trying to manage and push things the way we want, the smaller our das is.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that man is a metaphor for everything we need in this world. We need parnasa, but we don't need just parnasa. We need insights, and we need a calm state of mind. But I don't know how to kind of just pull those things down, kind of on command. I don't know how to get parnasa on command, beyond making my humble efforts. I don't know how to get any of that. And what I see is that there is a hachna, and there's a recognition that I'm not in control, that to me goes side by side with, I'm not in control, and the reason why, and that's fine, because when I'm in an agitated state, it's not really a problem. It's really not a problem to be in a bad mood. I might try to do a little bit less decision-making, and significant undertakings in a bad mood, but I'm just not as inclined to be, to start drawing conclusions about myself, my life, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll share with you an interesting story I heard from someone recently who, a lovely young woman, a very serious, really a very serious bas, base Yaakov girl, really committed to doing avoda and all kinds of things. And, she finished learning, she's had the opportunity to learn about these principles in a pretty focused way for the last year or so. Baruch Hashem, she just became a kala. And when I asked her, because I interview people, I asked them, what is it that you see and how has this helped your understanding? How has this understanding helped you? And she said, I just feel so hopeful. I just have this trust that things, whatever comes my way, I'm going to find a wherewithal to deal with it. And I now look back at my sincere and serious avoda, and I realize that to a certain extent I was walking around troubled and upset. And if you were to ask me at the time, I would have told you, well, that's just because avoda is hard and doing the right thing is hard and overcoming your midos are hard and it's difficult. Now I see that I was walking around with a frustration and a struggle. But it looked to me at the time that it was just, and now I see, she said, that there are times where I was thinking about my life and my avoda from a low state of mind. And as a result, I felt discouraged quite a bit. And she shared how, a beautiful story of her shidduch. Like, Baruch Hashem, the shidduch went, it was going well. And she got to a point where she and the guy were basically, planning to get engaged. And the guy, and they made plans that, it was before Yom Tov, I don't know which Yom Tov, but it was before Yom Tov, and they made plans that they were going to get engaged 2 days after Yom Tov. So they were going to, go back to their families, spend Yom Tov with their families, and then a couple days later, they would make an announcement. So she goes back to her family, and people, what's going on, and all of a sudden, she freaks out. She starts to get really scared. She's like, what am I doing? Like, do I really know this guy? And am I crazy? Like, and what about this? Which is somewhat, it can happen. And what she saw a short way into the freak out, she saw she saw how her feeling just went so far south. And right away she realized, I'm really, I'm freaking out right now. Like, this is, it feels really troubling. Like I can feel my body shaking about the implications of this decision. But at the same time, I'm like aware that I'm really getting caught up. And right there, she started to chuckle. She started to laugh to herself, and she didn't need to do anything. She still felt, it didn't just lift the feeling right away, but she didn't. She could see that it was her thinking that just got really insecure. And you know, lo and behold, within X amount of time, you know, now obviously in a situation like that, had she, you know, persisted in her freakout state for, you know, a day, or 2 days, a week, okay, then, you know, there might be something to talk about. What is this, you know, whatever. But she knows enough at this point to realize how normal it is to get scared about things in life and how much it's just not really much of a statement about how life is, you know, really working. And then she emerged from that state of from that experience with even a deeper feeling of trust, with even a deeper appreciation for the gift of life and for the gift of being able to wake up. And if there's anything that I could share with people is we started off with someone raising the point that like is there really a strategy here? Like, are there tools here? Like, is there something here to do? And the answer is no, there isn't a strategy or a thing to do, but yet we have to acknowledge that there is this, you know, we can see that there is this kind of spiritual truth underlying our experience, and that's showing up for us. And there is the ability that we have to get in the way and to complicate our capacity to experience a new and really helpful, refreshing wisdom.
That's nice. Reminds me a little bit of something Dove said recently. You know, as an addict, when a thought comes to him, a lustful thought, you know, instead of struggling with it or feeling down about it, he kind of just chuckles to himself. And he says, he's like, there I go again. You know, that's the addict to me.
Beautiful.
That's sort of what you said, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and you know, if for folks who are listening and wondering, well, what do I do with this, you know, I would say it's just enough to just simply notice, and just without really much of an exertion, just to be able to notice, do you see that your moods are working? You know, when no matter where you're at in life, you know, there's going to be fluctuation. You know, a person who struggles with a compulsive behavior is going to feel lighter at times, and he's going to feel way more stressed and compelled at times. And the question is, well, what accounts for that? You know, like, is it the breakfast cereal you ate that day? Is it the fact that you got a nice compliment from your boss or your wife that accounts for that lift? To me, it's pointing to something that's mysterious and spiritual and beautiful and reliable. And you know, the more we see that, the more we see that kind of impersonal power of thought unfolding, the less we are inclined to see our feelings as really meaning as like front page. It's just not front page news as much. You know, when it's not front page news that we're feeling troubled or feeling this or feeling that, naturally we let go. Naturally, we let go of the thoughts, and they move on their own. And then the wisdom that's available kind of comes in and, you know, and carries us. So, Yaakov, I think, you know, I'd love to hear if you have any other comments or questions, but, you know, I'm kind of happy with what we've touched on today. Do you have anything else to add?
I think these principles can be very helpful for people struggling with addiction if they internalize them properly and learn these principles and implement them in their lives. You know, it sounds very similar to the 12-step program in a lot of ways. you know,
okay.
not being in control and sort of letting go and realizing it's all Hashem.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And, you know, if anyone is interested, I do encourage people, it can be very encouraging to hear other people's experiences of waking up to a new understanding and just seeing, you know, how normal it is, how normal it is that people wake up from really significant troubles and difficulties and you know, behaviors. And so if they're interested, folks can take a look. I've got a beautiful selection of testimonials, video testimonials and written testimonials on my site, JewishCenterForWellbeing.com. You know, there's a video tab with testimonials. So I encourage people to take a look. And then meanwhile, God willing, we're here next Monday, 5 p.m. Eastern time. And Yaakov, I thank you so much for your help in moderating the call today.
Yeah, thank you, Rabbi Harris, for doing this. I really appreciate it. And if anybody on GYE wants to, you know, learn more about the innate health, you know, lessons and take it really seriously, is there a way for them to do that? Would they contact you or through the website or?
There's some beautiful and simple FAQs on my site that they can get a little bit of a, you know, kind of a, in one place, some simple, concise explanations. There's quite a bit of video content available for free to watch, you know, talks. There's upcoming in January, beginning of January 3rd, 4th, and 5th in the New York area, we're going to be doing a conference involving over 15 speakers from around the world coming to share and present, which is available both in person. It's for people, you know, learning about everything from Shalom bias to parenting to just peace of mind. And it will be available also through a web stream ticket option as well. So, you know, it's a very rich experience that people just being together and learning and, you know, tasting this understanding. It's a really special experience.
Okay, wonderful. I hope people take up the opportunity. Thank you, Rabbi Harris. Thanks once again.
My pleasure.
And we'll be together again next week in Mitzvah Shem, Monday night.
Yes, God willing. All the best.
Monday afternoon. Kol tov. Bye-bye.
Bye.